will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another in our series of podcasts regarding the history of Silicon Valley. This has been an exciting set of podcasts that we've done because I've been able to sit here and reminisce all about the history of the industry or the Valley, starting all the way back to 1957. So here we are, we're in the 2000s in the 21st century. And with me today, I have Peter Marchetti, who's a financial advisor and a good friend of mine, as well as Guy Smith, who's my director of marketing at Tough Things First. So hello to both of you.
Howdy ho.
Hey, Ray, good morning.
Well, guys, here we are. We're really into the 21st century. I think last time we talked about kind of where was the industry headed, or where is Silicon Valley headed, and just kind of the whole, give it a, kind of a, an idea of the landscape. We've just exited 20th century. We had the Y2K issue. We had the, you know, the dot-com implosion, where all these companies that were heavily funded finally have run out of money and have closed up shop and weren't able to pivot very well. Where's the next 20 or 30 years gonna take the industry?
Well, I think one thing we talked about in the last call, Ray, you started getting into the cell phone market and how that was pushing things forward and a lot of other technologies. And, you know, coming around the middle of the 2000s, we had the introduction of the iPhone, which took the cell phone market in a completely different direction with the smartphone introduction to everyday life. And I guess I'm wondering, how did you see that changing the semi space and pushing technologies forward, and, you know, what companies kind of directly benefited from that?
Well, you know, we had really, there's three parts to the, what we call the smartphone. There's the cell phone portion, which is something that came in, you know, back when I was a kid. Actually, my father had a telephone that had a, like a 9 or 10 foot antenna on it, and had a telephone handset, and we could make mobile calls. Of course, it was very expensive, and he didn't want me using it very much. I just used it to impress the girls, as you would. But it was quite an interesting device. It took up half the trunk space of the car. This was back in the 50s. But then it's kind of migrated now. The cell phone became smaller and smaller and smaller. And then they came out with the PDA, which is the personal assistant. And that kind of took on a life of its own. And you know, a lot of people had their cell phone, they had their PDA, and they also had a separate device called a camera. Now, of course, cameras have been around forever, for, you know, a couple hundred years maybe. So Apple decided they were going to do, they're going to combine it all. They're going to combine the cell phone, the mobile phone, as you would, with the PDA and with a camera. And I thought that was a dumb idea because, I, you know, when I use a phone, I just want to call somebody. But they said, well, but look at, people like personal digital assistants, and they also would like to be able to take a picture whenever they want. None of us really carry our camera with us. And so they said, well, but, you know, it'd be nice to be able to take these snapshots of things, and to have your, if you had a camera built into your phone, you know, that'd be really cool. So, you know, so it's interesting how one thing leads to another thing leads to another thing. And so, you know, the PDA kind of led into the combining it with the cell phone, and then the camera being integrated into the cell phone. Yeah, honestly, because I'm not a big picture taker, and I thought it was a pretty dumb idea. But hit, well, look what's happened now. The camera in the phone has become very, very good. And it has allowed us to take pictures at will. And basically the camera business, the people who make cameras are basically, having to pivot to something else.
Well, what's interesting was Apple took it one step further. You had the basic PDA functions, which kind of made it a very, very low powered computing platform. And they said, why not think of the cell phone as the new, really, truly personal computer? And they had to think mm-hmm. of, you know, new human interface aspects to it. But when you get right down to it, what we carry in our pockets today are very, very powerful computers compared to the original personal computers of the 1980 era.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've got these watches now, these smart watches that, are as powerful as a big mainframe computer back in the 60s. And it's just amazing because of the way the technology has advanced to allow us to do so much more with technology than any of us could ever have thought or perceived of in the beginning. I remember as a kid, we had this cartoon called Dick Tracy. Every Sunday you used to get your cartoons that you could watch. And Dick Tracy had this watch that he talked into, and it had this long antenna wire that would go up his sleeve. And I thought, well, that's just way out there. I mean, that's out in the nether hinterlands, as you would. But here we are. And we have that capability now, virtually. We have a speaking watch, because you can now take phone calls and messages on your wrist.
Well, and I think this is really an intrinsic part to your semiconductor industry, because if it wasn't constantly pushing the boundaries, we could never achieve things like watches that we talk into. A couple of years back, I had to give a talk to some gearheads. And since I started my career at Kennedy Space Center, they launched the fourth space shuttle the first day I was on the job there. I compared the onboard flight computers that were on the shuttle with the cell phone in my pocket as a graphic demonstration of just how insanely more powerful computing platforms are. And I think because Silicon Valley and the chip industry is constantly pushing these boundaries, we're able to do more things in less real estate than ever before, and people have to keep becoming incredibly inventive to find new ways of exploiting all that power.
Isn't that also kind of like why the Apple's iPhone was so incredible? Because like the camera had been, I mean, I remember having a Samsung flip phone back in 2000 that took mm-hmm. pictures, and the pictures looked like something that, you know, like my, you know, 6-year-old would have drawn. They weren't very clear. They weren't very useful. And I was kind of like you, Ray, where I was like, mm-hmm. why even have this thing on here? But then the iPhone came out with all those capabilities, and the quality was just so far better from what I remember anything else being. And it really pushed everybody else to have to step up their game, right? And do a much better job and deliver a much better product.
Well, we talk about, you know, technology they refer to as the Internet of Things, because the Internet has really opened up, you know, Pandora's box, allowing us to do so much more electronically. The digital home, you know, being able to turn your refrigerator on or off, your lights on and off, or, you know, being able to have a electronic doorbell to let you know, even if you're not at home, that somebody's approaching your door. Security cameras. I remember, you know, back in the day, a security camera would cost you $5,000 or $10,000. Now you can get a security camera for less than $200. We're doing so much more because of the power of semiconductors than were ever thought possible. You know, we refer to generically artificial intelligence, AI. You know, it's because of the smartness and the power now that we have in our semiconductor technology that has really allowed electronic vehicles to come into being. The charging and just the storage capability of these batteries, lithium ion batteries, and then even some of the newer batteries that are coming out, allowing us to store tremendous amounts of energy in a very small footprint. And the same thing with semiconductors. You know, be able to have so much computing power in such a tiny, tiny footprint. So you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've only begun to scratch the surface of what semiconductor technology is going to allow us to do. And I'm excited about it because you can have a, you know, your medical capability right on your wrist or in your around your body somehow to measure your blood pressure, your heartbeat, your oxygen content. I mean, we're going to get to the point where we're going to be able to monitor many of our body functions on a real time basis, and be able to make it'll make decisions very, very, very practical. Know when to call your doctor, when not to call your doctor. You know, I mean, I know of a company that's that started up where there you don't have to go see the doctor anymore. You just go into a drugstore and sit down on some equipment. Of course, you know, I can see that progressing. You don't even have to go to the drugstore anymore. You just do it at home. But they have the equipment there to do all the diagnostics that you would have when you normally go to the doctor. For example, when you go to the doctor, the first 10 or 15 minutes, other than waiting for a doctor to show up, is they're taking all these measurements. Well, I mean, we're going to be able to take these real time, and there won't be any need to sit in a doctor's office. It'll be just telecommuted to his office, and then he'll have all the information, and you won't even have to go see your doctor physically, unless there's something urgent that he needs to have you there so he can take some other type of measurement.
You're right. We're right around the corner from having a Star Trek tricorder where they just scan it past your body and they know everything about your medical condition and history.
No, so I just think this is the tip of the iceberg. I mean, granted, we've come a long way. You know, when I was a kid, you know, from Dick Tracy's, you know, watch that he wore, talked into, to where we are today, where we all have that capability, not just Dick Tracy. So these are exciting times.
You bumped up to the topic of sensors, and I'd like to dive into that because we're seeing something very visible. I mean, you talked about the Internet of Things, but a lot of the sensors that are on inanimate objects around us are not very visible to the average person. But then you have autonomous vehicles, which mm-hmm. are loaded with sensors from stem to stern. So, you know, I don't know enough about the sensor part of the semiconductor market to know where they're exploring the new frontiers and how much of a opportunity that is for people both investing and also looking for new careers.
Well, you know, when you think of the person driving a car, he is in effect the sensor. You know, his eyes, his ears, his feel, you know, all those senses that we have, you know, feeling, smell, hearing, optical, all those go into driving our vehicles. You know, if you smell like something's burning or like oil, you know, something's leaking, I mean, or rubber burning or something, you smell that, you say, oh, I got to pull over, you know, or, you know, you hear something, you hear a noise in a transmission or hear the engine knocking or something, and you can pull over, you know, or if you see something, smoke coming up from the hood of your car or whatever, you can see that. Or, you know, as you drive down the road, you see the landscape, you know, I got to turn here or stop here. But all that now can be incorporated and integrated into a smart device. And that's why cars now are becoming predominantly electronic. You know, there's really no need for human intervention except to get in the car and it knows you're there. And then you either speak to it or it even maybe would know where you want to go. I mean, you could have it pre-programmed, like, you know, again, it's something that I think is out there in the future, but, you know, it can literally, you just get in something. And it immediately senses you're there, and it just knows because it's pre-programmed. It knows what you want to do, and it just takes off, and then it goes to where you want to be, and you get out and then do whatever you're going to do, and then hop back in, and it knows exactly what it wants to do. We have that with airplanes today. You know, we can program airplanes to go from point A to point B without any intervention with the pilot whatsoever. And so, you know, some of these airplane crashes that we've had have resulted from malfunctions in the electronics. So we're so dependent now on electronics that to the point where we're just going to be a passenger, as you would in a vehicle, or, you know, whether it be boat, plane, car, or whatever. So we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Well, that's a good place to end this podcast, and it's been a fun discussion. What we'll do is we'll conclude. We'll do say goodbye to everyone until you get next time. This is Ray Zinn, and I'm the head of Tough Things First. I have a new book coming out called Zinn of Zen 2, and you can get my first book, Tough Things First, still. You can acquire it on Amazon and or any of your retail bookstores. So thanks again, Guy and Pete, for being with me today. And we're looking forward to talking with you folks next time.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.